Good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us for our full year results. For participants on the call, our earnings release, full year results, supplemental presentation is all on our website. If you'd like to ask a question over the phone, please just dial star zero. This evening, we're going to hear from Jeff Schwartz, Chairman of the Executive Committee, who will provide an overview of GLP's fourth quarter results. Then we'll head with Ming Mei, our CEO, who will further discuss our business strategy. And then we'll finish up with Heather, our CFO, who will review our financial results. After that, we'll head into Q&A. And I will now hand it over to Jeff to start out.
Thanks, Imbika, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We saw our full-year results, our revenue, up 19% this year, ending the year with very strong performance. There's four key points I'd like to emphasize. One, earnings growth is accelerating as our development deliveries and strategic acquisitions really take hold and drive earnings. Two, as my partner Ming Mei will discuss further, while growth in China has moderated overall, we continue to see extremely strong retail sales growth. Retail sales are up 14.7% in the first 4 months of this year. Yes, it's not as high as the 17% last year, but still 14.7% is extremely strong retail sales growth, strong domestic consumption demand, and when you couple that with the critical shortage of modern logistics space in China today, our demand seems very solid, very stable, and even strong. We have made significant progress in building out our fund management platform, and going forward, we see very healthy growth prospects, driving enhanced shareholder value, increased cash flow, and earnings growth. Turning to our results for the fourth quarter, group revenue was up 23%. Earnings momentum continues to accelerate in China, with revenue from China up 96% this quarter. EBIT was up 148%, and PATMI also grew 218% this quarter. We achieved our full-year development starts target of 1.66 million square meters. Our target for next year is 2.4 million square meters of development starts, which includes 2 million square meters in China and 400,000 square meters in Japan. This is an increase year-on-year of 44%. Our existing portfolio continues to generate very solid results. Occupancy in China is 90%. New and expansion leases saw a year-on-year increase of 37% with 1.6 million square meters of new and expansion leases. In Japan, occupancy has increased 2% in the last quarter to 99%. Our recent leasing activity includes, in April alone, 52,000 square meters being leased at GLP Shinsuna, Narashina, and Funabashi. We have also made key progress in building out our fund management platform, as I discussed before. We entered into partnerships or joint ventures with both Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board and China Investment Corporation. We established a development fund of $500 million in equity with Canadian Pension Plan, or CPP, which will develop over $1.4 billion of assets over the next 3 years. These are very profitable development returns and stabilized returns once the buildings are completed for our GLP shareholders. In addition, as you know, we formed a $1.6 billion joint venture with China Investment Corporation to acquire the LaSalle Investment Management logistics portfolio in Japan, which has a first-year cash yield in excess of 12% to us. Our balance sheet remains very strong, the strongest in the industry, with $1.6 billion of cash on our balance sheet, very significant liquidity, net debt to total assets of 21%, and we continue to see demand from our customers with strong growth. That, coupled with our strong balance sheet, makes us well-positioned to drive further growth. I'm also very pleased to announce that as of today, our board has proposed a dividend of Sing dollars 3 cents per share, subject to shareholders' approval at our AGM this summer. And truly, in a troubled world where there's European debt crisis issues, a potential or impending crisis in the U.S. over the budget, we are very fortunate to be in the select markets that we feel are the best markets today, markets that we feel will outperform, will continue to outperform in the coming year, with a very solid balance sheet, strong growth opportunities, a strong customer base, and most importantly, an incredibly strong team on the ground in China, in Japan, and here in Singapore. With that, I'll turn it over to my partner, Ming Mei.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Before I go over the past year's performance results, I'd like to spend some time just to share with everyone on what we see on the ground in China, the economic environment. I mean, because these days you hear a lot and you read a lot about China, hard landing, soft landing, GDP slowdown, everything else. So the way we look at it is that we think GDP probably still be growing around 8 and 8.5%, slightly above what Premier Wen Jiabao believed is 7.5 target. Again, the major driver economy in China still rely on export, capital expenditures, as well as domestic consumption. We continue to see export to be weak because of you know, what's happening in Europe and also in the U.S. I think capital expenditure is something that the Chinese government still have a lot of room to leverage on. But I think there's a little bit of a wait and see and holding pattern in this segment because there's a political transition that's happening in later part of this year. So a lot of senior leaders in the central government as well as the provincial level has not been firm up. So a lot of people are still waiting and, on those major capital expenditure projects. But again, this is something that the central government, if they decided tomorrow they want to leverage to stimulate the economy, this is something that they can leverage on. So this is something that I believe that would be something that be used. The third thing is domestic consumption. This is more related to our business. As 80% of our facilities are used for domestic consumption business. So again, domestic consumption is something that the Chinese government had to stimulate and have to continue to grow because this is something that they can control. They can't control the demand from outside China on export, but they do can control, stimulate domestic consumption. I believe that they this is the area that they continue to focus on. And another driver for our business is that urbanization. We continue seeing people move into the city. As people move in the city, they consume four times more than rural area. And another trend is that when part of urbanization is that a lot of old warehouses that used to be gathered around the city are being torn down to make room for other uses. So as part of urbanization, drive new demand, but also tear down a lot of old supply. So it creates an imbalance in supply and demand. And again, that's also driving our business. Now let me go back to the past year. We expanded significantly over the last 12 months. Basically, we expanded to six more new cities. A lot of these cities are focusing on the, in the west part of China. We're also seeing migration manufacturing moving towards west part of China, so this is part of our strategy to capture that. And also we're seeing major hubs such as in Wuhan, Chengdu, and Chongqing has a huge population that has a lot of consumption-driven needs, so we continue to grow with our customers there. Over last year, we have expanded our portfolio by 2.3 million square meters. And again, that's partly combined by strategic acquisition as well as development on our own. Our total asset, our total value in China have increased from $3.9 billion to $5.4 billion, and that's a 36% increase in our portfolio. And additionally, we acquired 2.2 million square meters of land to drive further growth, and our land reserve has now gone from 5.7 million square meters to 8.8 million square meters. That's a 54% increase. And that will position us to meet our demand from our customers. Again, we continue to expand strategic relationship with our major customers, including customers such as Amazon. We just completed their northern logistic facilities in Tianjin, over 100,000 square meters, a new additional space. And again, when we complete all the expansion requirement for them, that location will be their largest fulfillment center in the world for Amazon. And again, besides Amazon, Alibaba, Shanger, Vanguard, Taobao, 360buy, all these users continue to expand with us with our network. Again, we also, despite what you hear about the economy, we actually continue to do surveys on our customers, and also we look at our pipeline backlog demands. And last quarter, we had a total pipeline of 4 million square meters of demand at the different stages of negotiation. And this quarter, our log is about 4.2 million square meters. So we actually have seen another 5% increase on the pipeline. So even though overall I believe that the Chinese economy, there's a sentiment of a slowdown, but based on what we're seeing from customer feedback, and also customer demand, we continue to see there's a strong demand for our facilities. I think that's partly because of domestic consumption driven, but also partly because there's an imbalance of supply and demand that's still not being matched yet. We also, as I mentioned, continue to do customer surveys because I read the same headline news that you guys read. So we constantly make sure that we're not building ahead of ourselves. The most recent survey, I can share some of the facts with you. We did a survey. Basically, 78% of the customers forecast a similar or faster business growth in 2012 relatively to 2011. And 76% of the customers expect 10% or greater business growth in 2012. Again, this is slightly lower than the 80% response rate that we experienced in 2011. And again, within the customers, we continue to see strong loyalty. All the feedback, 88% of customers have indicated that if we have facility available, and they will be growing with our network. Again, we continue to maintain our discipline on new starts. Whenever we acquire a site, we will not do any construction until there's an indicative demand of 1.5 times the space we're going to build before we break ground. And that we continue to use the metrics that unless our first phase is 85% lease up, we will not start the second phase. In this volatile environment, we continue to monitor the customer demand and also economic environment. And if there's any changes in the demand, we will have no hesitation to slow down our starts. And given that our overall construction cycle is relatively short, we do have advantage to adjust rapidly to any kind of changes in the environment. One of the sectors of customers that I like to share with you is that e-commerce. Even though recently, because the capital market is not as buoyant, so a lot of these e-commerce players are not looking for a quick IPO. But again, e-commerce is a trend to stay. We see continued shifting of traditional retail into e-commerce, and again, we benefit from that. We continue to see e-commerce continue to grow. We went from 0% of our customer base to 15% of total space that we provide right now. Another trend I'd like to share with you is that when we first started our business in China, most of the companies we deal with, we provide service to our international companies, such as DHL, UPS, Walmart of international companies. And this segment, international companies, continue to grow with us. But most recent quarter, of all the customers, 47% is made up of domestic China domicile companies. Again, international companies still can continue to grow with us, but we are capturing a large share of domestic companies that used to be perceive us to be expensive or not affordable. We're now able to crack that market. And again, this is very strategic significant because if we only focus on international companies, over time we'll become a niche player. So we demonstrate that we have the quality and the service to service the international companies, but we also have the cost position and the pricing competitiveness to target and compete with the local companies and win local companies as well. With that, I'd like to switch over to Japan. In Japan, we continue to see enjoying a very stable environment. We're not seeing demand from necessary new economic growth that drive new demand. But what we continue seeing is that companies continue to reconfigure their logistic network to become more efficient and to be more cost competitive. So, and again, we're not seeing a lot of new supply coming in a major city like Tokyo and Osaka. So occupancy and our portfolio actually have increased a couple percent last quarter from 97 to 99%. And partly the drop down to 97 is because we were repositioning some of the assets. We basically took back some facilities, vacant them, and then divide up into multi-tenant and able to release them at a higher rent. And we did just that. GOP Sinshuna is currently 70% lease up. And we continue, we expect that to be 100% lease up in a short period of time. In addition, this week we announced our third development in Japan with CPP, the Canadian Pension Fund. And GOP Asuki is a large-scale development in the Tokyo area, and it's already 35% pre-leased. So far, we have announced three developments within the Japan Development Fund with a total commitment of $427 million, and they're already 25% pre-leased. And again, we're talking to customers that have about five times the indicative demand for the remaining space. So, that shows the strong demand for high-quality facility in Japan. For financial year 2013, we're targeting starts of 400,000 square meters of development in Japan. And with that, I'd like to turn over to Heather to go over the financial numbers.
Thanks, Ming. If I could ask you to turn to page 5 of the PPT for financial results. Financial results obviously reflect the solid operation performance. As you can see, our revenue has increased by 23% for this quarter, and primarily driven by China, which revenue grew up by 96%. This is really due to the expansion of the China portfolio, both new completion as well as rental growth, and improved operation in general. EBITDA, excluding revaluation, increased by 27% to $119 million, again driven by China. China EBITDA, excluding revaluation, increased by 84%. Lightyear did contribute to our financial result this quarter as we're picking them up as a joint control entities. Partly excluding revaluation, increased by 16%. China, obviously, is a major contributor. The China partly excluding the valuation increased by 124%. This quarter result does include a $15 million loss on because of the weaker yen on intercompany loan, which is really non-cash. But on a total year basis, we actually recognized a $23 million gain on the foreign exchange. We recognized a gain in fair market value of the investment property this quarter on a consolidated entity basis, recognized $56 million. That's primarily because of China. For the joint control entities, we recognized $47 million. That's primarily driven by Japan, the LaSalle acquisition. We recognized 33% of LaSalle acquisition valuation gain based on valuation performed by a third-party valuer. The remaining 16.7% is capped on the balance sheet as the asset held for sale. If I could ask you to turn to next page, which shows page 6, shows total year financial results. Total year reflect more in line with this quarter as well. So revenue increased 19%, EBITDA excluding revaluation 15%, and partly excluding revaluation 13%. On a total year basis, we also recognized a valuation gain of $197 million for consolidated entities and $82 million for joint control entities. Turn to page 7. This is summarized the financial results for both this quarter as well as total year. again, illustrate strong financial performance and operation performance on the revenue, EBIT, as well as the PATMI. The negative variances for the total year was really driven by a revaluation that was recognized prior in the prior year. That's really a reflection of recovering from the financial crisis out of the 2008. Page 8 and 9 can be looked at together. Page 8 shows the segmental reporting for this quarter in U.S. dollar, and page 9 shows your local currency. And you can see in China, both revenue and the EBITDA growth was primarily driven by operation. There's a slight favorable foreign exchange impact. On the Japan side, the U.S. dollar terms have increased both in revenue and EBIT. But on local currency basis, the revenue is there's a slight dip. That's because of the temporary vacancy in some of the properties since then has been primarily leased up. The EBITDA excluding revaluation had a show 8.1% increase, and that's reflecting a contribution by the LaSalle acquisition as well. You could turn to page 10. Again, page 10 and 11 can be looked at together. It shows in U.S. dollar terms and local currency terms for the total year. Again, China revenue reflect true operation results, expansion of the operation as well as overall operation performance. Japan in the local currency term on the revenue side have 3% decrease versus last year. But if you really adjust for the one-off early termination fee, which we recognized in last year, as well as the rent loss from the earthquake that we recognize this year, the overall revenue is only reduced by 1.3%. On the Japan EBIT excluding revaluation, overall it shows a 0.9% decrease, but if you exclude those two items that I mentioned before, actually the profit increased by 1.2%. Page 12 shows a very strong balance sheet. We have cash on hand, $1.6 billion, and total equity, $8.3 billion. That's also including the perpetual that we issued early this year and late last year. On the total leverage ratio, our total debt to asset is 31%, and net debt to asset stand at 21%. Again, very healthy, relatively low leverage. Page 13 shows our debt maturity profile. If you recall, last year we had a significant debt mature in the current year. Our team spent significant effort, was able to refinance all those debt that were due, and also extended debt maturity to 5 years and beyond. As a result, we have a very healthy and strong balance sheet and very manageable and a staggered debt maturity profile. One thing I do want to point out is to increase transparency on the joint control entities. Starting this quarter, we did disclose more details for the JCEs, both on the P&L and balance sheet, and you can find those in the supplemental information. We are also, as we move more and more to the fund management platform, we also break out our revenue to rental revenue as well as income from fee that generate from managing third-party money. So that also can be found in the supplementals. So with that, I will turn over to Ambika.
Well, first what we'll do is we'll open questions up
to the audience, and then we'll go over the line because there are several people dialed in there. Before we speak, Jeff, not yet? Okay. Okay, great. So if we'd like to, what we'll do is just raise your hand if you want to ask a question. We'll bring a mic up to you, so if you could wait till the mic comes to ask a question.
Hi, Jeff.
Yeah. Once again, congratulations on a good set of results and the dividend surprise. Now, just wanted to get a better sense on margins. If you look at slide 11 of your presentation, it shows China grew revenue 73%, but EBIT, you know, grew about 61%.
Right.
There seems to be a bit of a margin compression. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that? And also, similarly for Japan, if you exclude the LaSalle investment for a like-for-like basis, what would it be looking at? Thanks.
I'll let, you know, margins also include, yeah, the fact that we're ramping up the development starts. So the costs and expenses related to the buildings that are under construction that are yet to be leased are included, the expenses are included in that. So the margin can be a little misleading. The margins are actually maintaining, are holding up very, very well. As it relates to Japan, Japan is very stable. I mean, you know, margins remain within 1, 2% on a consistent basis, and really it shouldn't be that much different. Lightyear versus not, well, without LaSalle or with LaSalle, Lightyear was a code name when we had it under contract. But with the CSC joint venture, without it, margins will be just about the same. Now, it won't show up identically within the financial statements because it does come under the jointly controlled entities as opposed to wholly owned assets, but you'll see a consistent margin level. Heather?
On the China margin side, obviously, the difference between revenue and EBITDA, excluding revaluation growth, in terms of the slight difference in the margin, was due to a few factors. One is, as both Jeff and me mentioned, we continue to invest in China. As a result, we're investing in people as well. So G&A obviously will be a factor. We'll continue to hire the best and the brightest people to make sure we can deliver the financial result and operation results and meet the customer requirements. And the other factor is the China many of the portfolio come to an age that needs a little bit of touch up. So there are some general OPEX that that will incur to maintain the standard and to meet the customer requirements. So that's on the China side.
Hi, Ming. Just two questions. First, can you just give us an update on the cap rate? Has there been any movements ever since the Lim acquisitions? And you said, you know, you guys are booking, you know, fair value gain. So has there been any movements there? And the second is your China rental rate says that it's growing, same store rental rate grew by 4%. So how do you expect that going forward?
On cap rate, in Japan, are we actually seeing some of the, because of our investment with joint venture with CIC, there seems to be a lot of interest and excitement in coming to this sector in Japan. So based on some of the feedback from appraisers and industry experts, they actually potentially see some cap rate compression in this sector. Again, currently, everything we do, we're underwriting, assuming no cap rate compression in our business there. But there seems to be that trend. We just recently had an executive committee meeting, and that's some of the feedback we're getting from the market. On China, again, we believe that the cap rate for our sector still have a big spread compared to other sectors like retail or office. But again, there's not a lot of transaction. So currently, in all underwriting assumptions and appraising, is still at the same cap rate as last year. But I do believe that there's some potential upside on that as well. I think as the rental growth continues to speed up, we will see more of that. And the major cities, you mentioned same-store sales 4%. Again, when we do renewals, we're actually seeing higher rent growth than that. And in a major city like Shanghai and Beijing, we're probably looking at like 6-7% rental growth. So again, we believe that there's still currently a mismatch between supply and demand in the market, and we continue to enjoy that benefit.
Right. Yeah, just a quick question, or a few actually. Firstly, on the starts for 2013, the 2 million, how many of those have you got 1.5 times indicative interest for at the moment? Secondly, on the 4.2 million customer indicative interest you have in China, typically how willing are they to wait sort of 12 to 24 months in order to fill that? How do you see that evolve over time? And then if I could just add one question on asset recycling in Japan, if you can give us any update, what your thoughts are, you know, what your sense of urgency is to recycle assets in Japan.
All right. As it relates to the 2 million square meters of starts in China, as well as the 400,000 square meters of starts in Japan and where the indicative demand is, we don't start anything unless we have 1.5 to 2 times indicative demand for the building. It goes to investment committee immediately prior to breaking ground, and we do have that level of indicative demand, so it remains there. As it relates to customers waiting, all I can tell you is if you look in the supplemental, in the fourth quarter, our last quarter this year, we had 220,000 square meters of new and expansion leases and 80,000 square meters of buildings completed. So there was, you know, we leased almost 3x the amount of space that was completed during the quarter. That being said, that, you know, obviously you can't do that forever. You can't lease up faster than you're completing. We're seeing strong demand in China. Within our portfolio of domestic consumption-related buildings in China, we are 96% leased. Now, as you know, that goes back to the point of retail sales growing 14.7%, domestic consumption being strong. Almost every building we're starting today is domestic consumption-related within that pipeline. There is some weakness, obviously, in export-related. That accounts for the bulk of our vacancies, but all our new products, for the most part, are domestic consumption-related, and our domestic consumption-related portfolio is 96% leased. So we're seeing very strong demand. The last point on recycling capital, with $1.6 billion of cash with 21% net debt levels, we don't need to do anything. We are focused on recycling capital in Japan. We'll do it at the right time. We'll do it with the right structure or right partners. And we like our Japan business. It's 99% leased. Cash on cash returns are phenomenal. Return on equity is phenomenal in Japan. If you look at returns, the margins that you talked about, if you look at the fact you run a business with $8.5 billion of assets with all of 65 people and one office with a tiny satellite office in Osaka, it's a great business and it's one we feel strongly about, but we have made a commitment that we will recycle capital. We will keep our equity base the same or smaller in Japan long term as we grow the business, by using multiple forms to do that, whether they be private vehicles, whether they be public vehicles, time will tell, but we're very focused and we will get it done.
I just want to add one more point on the customer willing to wait for us. We've currently gone beyond just completing building and leasing to customers. We actually go into the customers' offices and working with them to plan for what the next 2 to 3 year facility requirements are. And recently, we just finished an exercise with a major online retailer They're one of the largest in China. They gave us next 3 years what city, how much space they need, and then we start planning with that. So again, we're trying to become more of a partner and solution provider instead of just say, here's the facility you can lease from us. So again, that also helped mitigate some of the demand lagging behind on the supply.
Just on the 1 to 2.5 times indicative coverage for start, what percent of your 2 million you're planning for this year already have that? Have they been approved by the management committee to start, or is that too early?
Again, the 2 million square meters are the target based on the 4 million square meter pipeline backlog. Again, each project individually will have to be approved. So as the year moves along, each project gets approved and it starts. So the way we work is that we don't approve, say we're going to start 2 million square meters this year. We basically, this based on the customer backlog demand, we think that there's a need for this, and based on our capability, we can deliver that. But each project individually is approved separately.
Hi, Ming. Just wanted to ask if you could shed more color on the online retail space, and specifically, like, how much does each retailer prefer to lease versus building and operating its own?
It's interesting. I just had a meeting in Beijing with the founder of one of the major. He's been everywhere on in the news and everything. But it's interesting. He made an announcement that he wanted to build all his logistic facilities a couple of years ago, and he actually stopped buying sites. He requested a meeting. And we actually leased to them a couple of spaces in the past. But he requested a meeting. I met him in Beijing, and he realizes that his business is growing at a pace that even himself are not able to predict. And I asked him, I said, do you know what your business is going to be like in 3 years' time? In front of his staff, he said, I don't, because everything he had predicted in the past has been wrong. So I said, how can you commit to a piece of land and build a facility for your business when you don't even know what your growth trajectory is going to be like? And then also, how you're going to shift and move your adjust your business according to the customer. So what we can provide them is the flexibility, a network on a national level. So we can help them expand or shrink in certain areas. For them, it's an operational headache. If they don't have the forecast right, they can build a facility that's too big. They can set it vacant for 3-5 years, or they don't build it big enough. If they end up with two facilities in the same city, that means that the operation needs to have two set of inventory, and the truck has to go two locations, pick it up, and deliver. Operating costs is too high for them. So again, after they try it for a while, they came to us and said, we want to work with you, and here's our next 3 years requirement. So I would say there continue to be customers that will like to enjoy the benefit of owning the facility and maybe enjoy the appreciation of the assets. That's a typical Chinese mentality sometimes. But after they do it for a little bit, they realize that the operating cost efficiency outweighs the potential appreciation of the assets. So again, we will continue to see people will buy their own asset and do it, and then eventually we may end up working with them, partner with them. So I wouldn't rule out that there will always be people out there wanting to build their own facilities. But again, the demand for people that want to lease is so big, because traditionally state-owned companies that used to own everything themselves, like China Resources or Sinotrans, all these traditional state-owned companies that used to buy everything themselves, they began to start leasing from us. So again, that's why over time, 47% of all the facilities are being leased out, it's become Chinese companies. And that's because of the shift in mentality and the change in the way they look at their operation, their business.
Just two questions. First is on the management fee income. To see that it's growing pretty nicely Q-on-Q basis. Has the LaSalle portfolio been started to contribute already for the management fees? And could you share some color on the structure of the management fees? Fee income on this one. Second, what is the deferred tax amount for the fourth quarter? Thanks.
As it relates to the LaSalle investment management fees? The answer is yes and no. Yes, it started to contribute. No, we won't give any color as to what the actual fee structure is. We have confidentiality agreements. The good news is we work with the best investors in the world, the GICs, the CPPs, the CICs. It's all good news, actually, but they prefer things to be kept private. But it's very good for our shareholders to be working with the best of the best. And I'll let Heather talk on the second point.
For the deferred tax, this quarter is $14 million out of the total tax of 23. That, as you see there, versus last year, the deferred tax was about close to $9 million for the same period.
Hi. I have two questions. One is about dividends. Nice to see some dividends flowing through to us. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And just I want to hear the logic behind the 3 cents. Not why not two, why not five? Is it payout or dividend of equity? And also the long-term sort of outlook for your dividends growth. And the second question is, assuming you recycled the assets in Japan, how you're going to use your proceeds? How much to maybe special dividends? How much to China? How much you want to pay down to debt? If you have a rough image, I appreciate the hearing. Thank you.
As it relates to the dividend, the board deliberated over what the proper level was. We clearly have very significant growth opportunities in our markets. We don't consider ourselves to be a dividend play or a passive, you know, REIT structure. We're in a market where China, for instance, has 1/14 the amount of distribution space per capita that the U.S. has today. 80% of it is completely, totally, functionally obsolete. So if you multiply that out, there's a lot of space that needs to be built. We're in a market leadership position. We're the size of our next 9 competitors combined today. So there's a lot of growth and a lot of opportunities. That being said, there are a lot of investors out there that can't invest in companies unless they pay a dividend. We want to allow those investors to invest with us. So, and we also wanted to, you know, pay some dividend to our shareholders, but retain the bulk of our capital for growing the business and getting superior returns, because we do believe we get superior returns. You know, the three of us are, you know, have a significant portion of our net worth in the company. We're very comfortable reinvesting in this company, which we're doing every day, and we expect to continue to do. As far as the nature of the dividend, we set the dividend at a level that we think is we believe is sustainable, that will continue in years to come. How it grows, time will tell, but we're very, very comfortable, and we're excited about new shareholders that we'll attract and rewarding those shareholders that have been loyal to us in the past. As it relates to Japan, we have not recycled capital yet, so it's hard to talk about what that quantum would be and what the structure would be. But suffice it to say, in a world where U.S. treasurers are 1.9%, some people believe they'll go to 1.5%, where German bond is 10-year bond is 1.5%, the idea of getting in the third largest economy in the world, a very strong economy, it's not a high-growing economy, it's an extremely strong economy, cash-on-cash yields of double digits is very attractive to investors. So whether it be a private structure or a public structure, we feel confident we will get capital recycling done and we'll be able to reinvest that capital at very attractive returns.
We have a question on the line, so let's turn it over to the questions on the call. If any other additional participants would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Thank you.
Your first phone question comes from the line of Tony Dowell from Daiwa. Please ask your question.
Right. Thank you very much. Just a couple of questions in terms of the operating portfolio in China, and then a little bit more clarity on the revaluation gains. Just in terms of your China portfolio, I know that you've got it's 90% let. I'm just trying to find out what's the occupancy in the developments that were completed in FY12. Secondly, the average portfolio rents in China seem to be up about 4% year on year. I'm just trying to get an idea of what the same store rent reversion would likely to be. Heather did mention something about the revaluation gain. I was just wondering if we could split the net gain of $241 million between what was in China and actually what was in Japan. Thanks.
Well, let me I can answer on the developments completed last year and what the lease-up rate is. Again, if you look at it, we completed 1 million square meter of last year, but we leased up 1.6 million square meters. So again, the most of the stuff that we started last year were lease-up plus what we had from before. And on the same store sales growth of 4%, we have some leases that are still signed in 2009 after the financial crisis. So I think those are a bit conservative on the rental growth. So I would expect we should have some room to grow from the current basis. As far as the gains, I will hand to Heather and to explain.
On the total year basis, the gain on investment property for the consolidated entity is $197 million. Out of that, $170 million is China. So it's primarily driven by China.
Can I ask whether those are a reflection of the completion of the development properties, or has there been any change in terms of the assumptions?
There's no change on the basic assumption in terms of cap rate and discount rate. This is really reflecting the development profit, as China has been continuing developing and increasing our portfolio there. And as they get stabilized, completed, we'll recognize those gains. In the fair value changes or increase in China, it's also reflected the rental increase that we have seen in different markets. And also reflect in the same store as well. So we see very, very strong customer demand and a good and rental escalation as well.
Great, thank you. If I just ask one last question of Jeff, there was a comment or a question related to the timing in terms of monetization and the J-REIT. I might have missed the answer, or is there any specific dates or timing in terms of a potential J-REIT?
Tony, what I answered before and what I'll answer again is that we're in a very fortunate position that we've got a lot of cash on our balance sheet. We've got very low debt levels. We are committed to, we have a lot of interest in on the private side, and potentially we could do something on the public side in Japan as in the form of monetization. But there's no rush. We'll do the right transaction for our shareholders at the right time, and we want to make sure that we get the right execution. So we're in a good position that we don't need to do it today. We don't need to do it tomorrow, but we will do it when the time is right. It's something we are committed to doing, something that we're interested in doing, and that we will, you know, keep our equity constant or reduce our equity over time in Japan while growing the platform there, which is extremely profitable, extremely successful platform.
Great. Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Ken Yong from Citi. Please ask your question.
Hi. I wanted to get some numbers from you. First is you have acquired 2.1 million square meter of the land for future development. Can you give us an idea what is the average land cost? Previously, the previous batch you were talking about around 1,000 RMB per square meter. I don't know whether this number is going to go up or down on your 2.1 million square meter new acquired land bank. And secondly, regarding the competition, 2012, 1 million, 2013, can you let us know what's the competition in China? And thirdly, which is very, can you let us know what is your, for example, very quick number on your newly completed China property? What is the initial yield on cost? And also, what is your expected initial yield on cost on your Japan portfolio, which you are going to start off around 400,000 square meter? Thank you.
Our completion yields have remained relatively constant in China, 8.5% to 9.25% development yields. In Japan, we expect them to range development yields between 6.5% and 7.5%, which creates very nice margins in an environment where properties today are probably valued at just below 5% to 5.5% upon completion. And financing can be done 7 years fixed at 1.2%. It's a very, very attractive yield. As it relates to the other questions,
I think, Ken, you asked the question about, in general, the land cost.
Land cost, yes. 2.1 million square.
What we're seeing is that land continue to be constrained, and that's why you see that we have such a leading market position, because we had the land position, we have early move advantage, and we continue to have a strong land reserve that can be converted. What we're seeing is that land quota by the government is continuing to be tight, and also relocation costs for farmers continue to be increasing. So what we see is that land costs will increase. In some instances, it could be as high as 20-30%, and in some places maybe as high as 30-40%. But again, we're able to maintain our initial yield constant because the supply and demand situation, because the land constraint applies to everyone. So what we're seeing is that as over time, as the land continues increasing in cost, the rent also goes up. And they usually may be lagging 1 or 2 years behind, but it happens everywhere. So I would say continue to see rental growth to continue to be strong, partly because of new demand, but partly because of the supply, the cost base is going to increase, and also a constrained supply. So that's why we feel confident with the rental growth. Again, it's good for our install base, and also we always want to be staying ahead on a land position of 1 or 2 years, because we want to make sure that we have that buffer to convert the land in time, and also to capture the cost to justify initial yield 8.5% to 9% development yield, and continue to enjoy the rental growth.
And regarding the completion, 2013, any idea?
What was the question on that again, Ken?
The completion in 2013, China.
We're targeting 2 million square meters as starts, but it's a blend of the 1.6 million what wasn't completed this year. You're going to remember that in China we have an average 6 to 8 month construction cycle, so the bulk of what was started will be completed in 2013, so it'll be a blend between those two numbers.
Thank you.
We have one question via WebEx. That question is asking us what our plans are for refinancing our debt over the next year.
As you can see, actually, on the chart, we only have about 24% of the total debt that's going to expire next year. As we demonstrated this year, our ability to refinance almost 40%. The total debt for the group at a much lower cost, which much, much, much longer tenor, we're very confident that we'll be able to manage that refinancing at a pace that we think will meet the business need.
Yes, hi. My question is for Heather. You've got about 2.4 million development starts for next year. Can you just give us some color on your CAPEX needs that corresponds to this?
We generally don't give out CAPEX projections. We do give out the starts. As we said before, last year CAPEX was about 800 million, and we did meet that target. As we grow our start about 20-25%, I think the numbers you probably can figure out simply doing just the math.
And within Japan, remember, Michael, that it's within a 50-50 joint venture with CPP, Canadian Pension Plan. I think with that...
I've got another question. This pertains to greenfield developments in Japan. Some of your competitors have opted to go for the build-to-suit with players like Monotaro, you know, Start Today, whereas for your greenfield, you've done multi-tenanted buildings. Is that a deliberate decision, and are there any difference in the economics when you do build-to-suits and multi-tenanted?
You will find us doing build-to-suits, so stay tuned on that. We're working with a number of customers. But yes, you do get a higher yield typically on a multi-tenant facility. The margins are slightly better. The competition's higher on build-to-suits. But it's a lower risk profile. It's a lower return profile. But if you look at the substantial leasing we've already done on the three buildings, and the demand we have for those buildings, we feel very comfortable on a risk-adjusted basis. It's a superior return. But we will be doing some build-to-suits. With that, just want to wrap it up with a couple points. One, despite the headlines about China and all the doom and gloom in the paper about China, it's still seeing better GDP growth overall than any place else in the world. And retail sales, domestic consumption grow at a double-digit rate, making us very comfortable, making our business solid, but we will continue to monitor it. We're very diligent. We're very diligent on our underwriting. We're very diligent on requiring substantial demand in excess of the space we're going to build before we break ground on the building, and we will maintain that diligence throughout the next year. But today, our business remains very solid. Japan, in a very slow growth environment, is 99% leased, showing the attractiveness of modern logistics facilities in an economy and the way customers can save money and the network effect of being the leader and serving customers well. Today we announced the dividend, our first dividend, we expect to go forward. Hopefully this is a way of rewarding our existing shareholders as well as attracting new shareholders, particularly those shareholders that can't invest unless it's a dividend-paying stock. And we feel overall very good about the business, and are very excited about the coming year, and want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. Thank you.